This episode contains explicit discussion of sexual assault, harassment, and abuse. Hey, welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Devin.
And I'm Varsha.
And today on the pod, we are about to go the fuck off on Kavanaugh. And honestly, I am so angry. I'm actually still rage shaking. And I've been talking to Varsha and also Marissa, who hosts Press Midterms with me, about how upset and angry we are. And so this is hopefully going to be very cathartic. We're also going to talk about some other horrible fucking stories. We're going to talk about how the Department of Homeland Security was never had a central database or tracking process for the kids that they process, which, duh. Varsha and I have been saying that since the beginning of time. There's no fucking process. Ugh, fuck. See, that's the level of rage you expect from this episode, y'all.
It's a lot of anger. It's a lot of anger. It's a lot of righteous anger.
There's also a new Trump policy about diplomats in the United States, and same-sex partners will not be allowed to stay in the United States unless they are legally married to their partner, which is just fucking cruel, which is kind of like, well, duh, Trump is cruel, water wet, let's go home. We have one hell of a show for you today, so buckle up, kids, because it's about to get weird. Kavanaugh was confirmed, which I don't think anyone was necessarily surprised by, but I think a lot of people were floored by it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because I feel like right at the beginning when he was nominated, right at the beginning of the summer, everyone was like, okay, welcome Justice Kavanaugh, right? And then we had this whole summer. We had his past rulings on Roe, on net neutrality, on guns, on healthcare, on basically everything, right? His whole judicial record was aired out. The way he conducted himself under the Bush administration was aired out, but not to the extent that we actually should have had, because all these documents were hidden. And then we had the allegations.
Well, just to start, before we even get to Dr. Ford, I mean, from the get-go, this was a fucked up process. First of all, Merrick Garland is on the phone and he still says, fuck you. And second of all, you know, they asked for all these documents from the National Archives and they wanted them in like 24 hours. Then the National Archives were like, LOL, no you. And then what documents they did release, it was decided what was classified and what wasn't by like an old buddy of Brett Kavanaugh's. We did not have a full picture of what this guy was up to. And I'm not even positive that even the senators got access to the full breadth of documents related to him.
Oh, no, they didn't. So the senators got the same documents that the public got, except for a little bit of stuff that was like deemed like classified, and some of that stuff that was deemed like committee confidential or whatever was released by Cory Booker, and at times other stuff was like leaked out, but we did not get the full picture, and the senators definitely didn't get the full picture. And basically Republicans were like, I don't give a fuck, right? Jeff Flake wasn't like giving big floor speeches about how horrible this is for the Senate when that was happening. So nothing was like, everything was on track to be confirmed, for Kavanaugh to be confirmed, and no one was like surprised, but people were still floored at how horrific the process was and how radical this guy is as a justice. And then Dr. Ford comes out with the allegations, right? And we've already hashed out on this show about how all of that happened. You know the timeline, you know everything. But there were people in my life, really smart people on like both sides of this issue. I'm not saying I really support the other side, which is all like, I don't believe Ford is telling the complete truth and whatever. But like people on both sides of this issue were telling me a couple weeks ago, oh yeah, Kavanaugh's gone. Welcome to Justice Amy Barrett, right? And I was like, I don't know, man. Like I'm no like professional historian, but we fucked over women a lot in the past like couple decades. I don't think we should be all like claiming victory or claiming defeat or whatever right now. When it happened Saturday, when he was finally voted in, I went back to 2 weeks ago and thought about all the people who were telling me, oh yeah, this guy's toast. And I thought about myself, like, and how I thought, oh yeah, this guy's toast. And then I realized I pieced together all the events that had to happen for him not to be toast since the allegations came out and since his confirmation. And the stuff that had to happen was, one, Kavanaugh had to like deny. Right? Because this is one thing that I was really interested in is from a purely like academic, you can say, point of view, I was just like, why doesn't he just admit that he was a drunk and apologize to Dr. Ford? And then I realized, oh, that would actually fuck him up more. Like, I was thinking that yesterday. And then the second thing I got pissed at is, you know, why didn't the Republicans just like confirm or like withdraw the guy and try to confirm somebody else? And then I realized that would make them look weak. And they don't like looking weak, which is basically a metaphor for sexual assault in our country. They fucking love the power and will do whatever they want to it. And then I thought about the role like the media had to play in it. And I think the media played a really exceptional role doing the work that like the FBI wasn't able to do because the White House restricted them. But then I thought about the Wall Street Journal editorial that came out yesterday. The headline was, and I quote, "Susan Collins consents." I wonder what the issue with that headline is. I wonder why that's problematic. All of these pieces just had to be like perfect and perfectly misogynistic for us to get to the point where Kavanaugh is confirmed, even though there are multiple credible accusations of sexual assault and sexual harassment, and also just multiple accusations, multiple instances where he lied during both hearings.
Well, and this, even if we set all that aside, I mean, you just talk about judicial temperament and mm-hmm. how there's absolutely no one who could have watched that testimony and said, this guy is neutral and stable enough to be a Supreme Court justice. No one fucking thinks that. No one thinks that.
Yeah.
And it doesn't fucking matter. You know what it feels like? You know what it feels like? When you watch like a good heist movie at the end where you've been watching this whole time and like you're getting this like slick part of the story and you think that goes wrong and the protagonists are going to be taken down and then they're not. And then they go back and they do that recap. It's my favorite part of any heist movie. And they go back and do the recap. All of the parts that they didn't show you to start with to make the climax more exciting.
Yeah.
And the whole story is revealed in that recap moment in the heist movie. That's what it felt like to me on Friday, because even though he wasn't confirmed until Saturday, it was a done deal on Friday. And I just remember thinking, like, this is the part of the movie where we're going to have a recap of all of the parts that we didn't see, that we weren't allowed to see, that made this possible. And that's not to say there was like some bigger conspiracy that we could even see. I'm just saying, go back even further than that. I mean, you can go back all the way to Anita Hill and start to put those pieces into why this was never going to derail his nomination. And that reveal was almost the most sickening part to me. And again, this like authoritarianism aspect of it, where the blatancy and the fact that it was all done out in the open, they aired all of this dirty laundry because it never mattered. It never mattered. It was never really a fair game. To go back to the heist metaphor, we were playing against the house.
Yeah.
And the house always wins. And that was the point of not rescinding Kavanaugh's confirmation. They were saying, we are the house. We are the casino and we always win.
It was also like Lindsey Graham's speech and media blitz and the fact that now apparently he's going to go to red state Democrat states and campaign for all those red state Democrats who voted against Kavanaugh. Like nobody fucking cares, Lindsey, but he's doing that specifically because, like, to play up this metaphor again, he is like, I am like this enforcer and that's the role I'm going to fucking play. Like, These are the quote unquote rules you have to abide by. And if you don't abide by them, I will like fuck you up. And that is the GOP right now. They set these arbitrary fucked up rules. They don't even listen to their own rules themselves, because remember, we're in an election year, but for some reason Trump gets a Supreme Court pick, but Merrick Garland is sitting on his ass in the DC circuit. So like, what the fuck? Then they set these rules and then they get so angry when Democrats point out, one, the rules are probably not fair, and two, hey, you're not following those rules anyway. There's so much bad faith because literally, like, Brett Kavanaugh in the 90s was saying, hey, if a public official lies about their sexual history, that is fucking cause for impeachment. I wonder who he was talking about. And then I wonder when he changed his mind about impeachment and lying under oath, when he became a Republican operative in the Bush administration. The reason that whole, like, this whole recap thing that happened to me as I was watching all this shit happen matters so much is because I'm going to spend like the next 30 years staring at this asshole's face anytime a Supreme Court news story is on the news and thinking about how he fucked us up. And it's all going to come back to what happened over the past couple weeks. and I'm going to remember the past couple of weeks for the rest of my life. I will remember it distinctly. I will remember recording the podcast that we did about the hearings. I'll remember recording like the reaction podcast right after the first stories came out. I'm going to remember the way Lindsey Graham let out his rage. I'm going to remember the indelible in the hippocampus is the laughter. I'm going to remember the laughter. Like, I really am. I'm going to remember people laughing it off on Twitter, people laughing it up on Fox News. It's going to be ingrained in my brain.
I'm going to remember John Cornyn tweeting, not hashtag beer for Brett, hashtag bubbles for Brett.
Motherfucker. I'm going to remember McConnell calling people, or McConnell, I think it was McConnell or Cornyn, I forget which one, but one of them called the people that were telling him their sexual assault stories, like the mob, or like harassing him, right? Like, and I'm like, what the fuck, right? I'm going to remember all of that. And I feel like, you know, Republicans got what they wanted. Like, let's not like beat around the bush. Let's not sugarcoat it. They won a major victory, right? If you look, think about it from like the political standpoint. But one thing they may not realize is they pissed off a shit ton of women, like a shit ton of women. Like, maybe they didn't piss off the 53% of white women who voted for Trump. Who gives a fuck about them? They pissed off everyone else.
I was so enraged. I was so enraged. And I was thinking about it, and kind of like the heist metaphor. Kavanaugh is like this tree that the GOP is planting, and it's going to be a pillar of American democracy for the next, you know, at 30 to 40 years. But what they failed to realize is that in a forest, the most dangerous part of a forest is the brush on the ground, because that's what catches fire and that's what brings forests to the ground.
Yeah.
And so for me, I think that it's was short-sighted of them to push so hard for this victory, because they forgot that women are the brush. They are the ones who are ignored and forgotten until one day just enough heat and enough light hits the bottom of the forest floor and the whole fucking thing comes down. And that's what I feel like right now.
Yeah, I just want people to remember, like, the day that Collins gave us that whole ass lecture during her, like, 40-minute speech, the website to donate to her opponent in 2020 crashed. It is over $2 million raised right now. And, like, you can argue that, oh, maybe that money should go somewhere else, whatever. Well, all that it shows, statistically, is that people are fucking pissed. People are donating $20.20 because they're fucking pissed. So I like how people, like, there's the Republican operatives or centrist people who are like, oh, are people really going to remember Susan Collins' vote on this Supreme Court nominee in 2020? Yeah. Yeah, they fucking are. Just as people on the left remember that Ted Cruz is one of the main reasons we don't have Justice Merrick Garland, just as people remember that Mitch McConnell is one of the main reasons we don't have Justice Garland, people are going to remember how Susan Collins betrayed all of us, mainly women, but she also betrayed all of us, because it's not just about Roe. Even though Roe was fundamentally important, it is also about the thousands of sexual assault survivors who were on her door begging. It is about the thousands of people, the millions of people on Obamacare who are begging her. It is about the millions of people who want common sense gun reform, and Collins just voted to confirm a justice who believes that an assault weapons ban is unconstitutional. She betrayed all of us. And the reason I call it a betrayal is not because, like, I expect her to be a liberal on justices. No, I expect her to stand by what she said 2 weeks before. Weeks before leading up to this nomination, she said, if it becomes clear that Kavanaugh is going to vote against Roe, or if it becomes clear that Kavanaugh lied, or if it's become clear that he does X, Y, Z, right, that she would vote against him. But no, she made up lies about all this stuff. She kept saying, oh, no, Roberts won't get rid of Roe, or I don't believe Kavanaugh is that radical, or I don't think Kavanaugh lied, or the most egregious lie of all and the most disgusting lie that I, quote, believe Christine Blasey Ford, but I don't believe that she was assaulted by Kavanaugh. Then you don't believe her, Senator Collins. You are literally butchering the English language to serve your political needs. But no, words fucking matter. And this line that Republicans have found, senators to normal people, that, quote, I believe Christine Blasey Ford, but I don't believe that it was Kavanaugh, that's a lie. That is a lie. And I tell my students, like, to not use the passive voice, because what they're saying when they say that is they're saying she was raped, not he raped her, right? It's unacceptable. It's grammatically unacceptable, and I will give that person an F, but also it's like morally and ethically unacceptable for you to say she was raped, put the onus of the rape or the assault on her, and to just literally forget that the man exists. And that is what Collins did. And so it was a betrayal. Jeff Flake also betrayed us, right? Because Jeff Flake said 2 days before this nomination went, like Thursday night or Wednesday night, he said, if it comes out that he lied, I won't vote for him. Still fucking did. Rationalize the fuck out of it. Joe Manchin said the same shit.
Joe Manchin's a fucking coward. First of all, Joe Manchin announced that how he would vote literally 2 minutes after Susan Collins did, because he's a fucking coward. Can't even stand on his own fucking 2 feet, because I don't do a lot of quoting of Hamilton because I don't want to overplay it, so it's really impactful when I do. But you don't stand for anything, then what do you fall for? What the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah, there were people who were making these smart political takes, quote unquote smart, where they were just like, oh, but like Joe Manchin like voted for ACA, like he voted against ACA repeal last year, and he's a Democrat when you need him. And I'm like, no, he isn't. We needed him here. Because he could have made this about anything other than the sexual assault if he really wanted to, right? He could have voted no by saying, hey, Kavanaugh is against pre-existing conditions. Or hey, Kavanaugh has some really weird fucking views on gun legislation. Hey, Kavanaugh has some really weird fucking views on voting rights. Or Kavanaugh has some weird fucking views on elections. Like, he could have used anything that pertains, or unions. Unions are big in West Virginia. He could have used any reason besides the sexual assault and Roe v. Wade. Instead, he chose not to. Instead, he chose to cower. Heidi Heitkamp, Joe Donnelly, Bill Nelson from Florida, they're all running in 2018 in red state seats, and they have worse polls than when fucking Joe Manchin, but they had the fucking courage to stand up with their party, but most importantly, for their own values and for their voters' values, right? And so I am not like an asshole. I don't wish Joe Manchin is going to lose in November. I don't want him to lose in November, right? But next time he's going to be primaried, like 6 years from now when he's primaried, I'm going to be there. Oh yeah, Joe, I'm going to be there. I'm going to make sure, I don't care how liberal the Democrat against you is, I'm going to make sure you are primaried out. This vote cancels out all the goodwill that you did in the past. It cancels it all out. I don't give a fuck. You're going to have to do a lot to build up this goodwill. And so, like, I bet you, by God's grace, if we get, like, the Senate in 2018, right, or we get the Senate in 2019, and, you know, God forbid, like, Justice Breyer or RBG pass away, like, I bet you Joe Manchin is going to be that asshole who's like, why don't we let Trump confirm a third justice? He's that asshole, right? So, like, I understand the smart political take on Joe Manchin being the Democrat when you need him. It's not enough for me. It's not enough.
I've said this several times before, and they have something called rhinos, Republican in name only. I guess maybe this is a dino, Democrats in name only situation.
Much better, I think.
But here's the thing, and here's what I've said over and over, is that this is the moment that I expected from my Democratic leaders. This is the fucking moment where I expected them to put it all fucking down on the line. And this is when I expected them to think past their careers and their own paltry little, I don't know, navel gazing, and look past being seen as a partisan. The fact that Joe Manchin's calculation was more heavily weighted to winning an election than to protecting women and his own constituents is quite possibly the most depressing part about all of this, because it just speaks to the larger issues that are implicit, though not explicit, with all of this. Yeah. That the way power is structured and the who has it and who's obsessed with it, someone like Joe Manchin, they're the ones making the decisions. And inherently, that is the problem. And inherently, it goes deeper than just Kavanaugh and Trump and Joe fucking Manchin. Because ultimately it's about power, and it's about how you wield it and when they choose to yield it. He didn't have the common decency to think past himself for 5 fucking seconds. That's the difference here. That's the difference between being a Republican and a Democrat. The difference is that when you're a Democrat, you look at your life and then you think about people who are not living your fucking life and what's important to them. And you think past what is best for me, and you get a holistic sense of what is best for the health of this nation.
I think what really bothers me about this is he, unlike the other red state Dems, are in a much better position to win re-election. He is in a much better position to make a case to West Virginians that he had to vote no on this and still win. And he didn't, right? He cowered, right? He made this stupid calculation that if he voted yes, it would make it easier for him to win re-election. But he's already, in my head, like, and from what I am seeing in the polls and from what I'm reading about West Virginia, like, it is pretty clear that he's doing pretty well and most likely won't lose. Right. And also, he is really popular in West Virginia for some godforsaken reason I don't understand. Right. So he could have at the very least thought of, what do West Virginians want? And West Virginians, at least his fucking voters, are probably union voters. So him voting for Kavanaugh isn't like a smart idea. It isn't good. Right. If he had just waited, if he had convinced Collins, Murkowski, and Flake to be like, oh, let's vote no and let's try to get another justice, right? And then if that other justice is worse on unions, whatever. At least you don't have a fucking sexual predator on the court.
Joe Manchin voting. Like, again, when you know, he's a Democrat. We need him to be a Democrat, blah, blah, blah. I get all of that and I get that. But for me, all it said to me was that power corrupts. And I don't mean to use a platitude here, but that he couldn't take a step back and he couldn't breathe long enough to consider the possibility that there's something more important than him being a senator. There are more important things. To me, what it really, really showed to me is that there's no dedication to being part of something larger than yourself, which is what everyone says about service and government and pretty much any politician, their stump speech is going to have a line in there about civic duty and service and being part of something larger than yourself. And then it gets to moments like this where you really have the opportunity to prove that this is about something bigger, something more important than you. And you just show me that was just lip service. And for no other reason, Joe Manchin, we will primary the fuck out of you in 6 years.
Like, I'm a rational human being. I want him to win in November because we can't get rid of him now and replace him with another Democrat. But in 6 years, I'm going to work my butt off to make sure some other Democrat is elected because it's unacceptable, right? And so, like, the next thing was, like, the Murkowski vote, right? And so Murkowski basically is like, I have to vote no on the guy. And initially, I was like, oh, wow. She voted no on it. But then I realized it was all some big, weird, like, conservative Jeff Flake, Collins, Murkowski Manchin, like, play because Steve Daines, a GOP senator, was like, oh, I have to be for my daughter. I have to be at my daughter's wedding on Saturday. I cannot come to the vote on Saturday, right? And so Murkowski's like, okay, I was going to vote no, but now I'll just vote present. So it still looks, or it still basically comes out that Kavanaugh will be confirmed. Because my vote as president will cancel out Steve's absence vote. And I was like, holy shit, you don't even have the fucking courage to sink this guy by voting no. And it wouldn't have sunk him, right? Because you still have Flake voting yes, you still have Collins voting yes, but still, you couldn't stand by your fucking vote. And the thing about, like, Collins is that, like, Collins, I don't know if people know this, but, like, she gave this long-ass speech that just would never end on Friday about how, like... God.
It was insufferable. It was fucking insufferable. Don't Google it. It was not worth it.
And so basically she was like, his judiciary record is all clean and amazing and blah, 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 blah. And then she got to the sexual assault. Right. And I already said this, but the line that made me turn off the speech and just take the weekend fucking off was when she said, like, I believe Christine Blasey Ford, but I don't believe it was Kavanaugh. I don't believe we can, like, deduce that it was Kavanaugh. And I was like, then you don't believe her. Then you don't fucking believe her. You are lying. You are lying to the United States Senate. You're lying to the country. You're lying to this live fucking audience that's waiting for you to just cave and betray women. And I fucking hate it. I cannot understand how people are just saying that.
Again, I would have probably respected her more if she had just said that I'm voting with my party. This is important. This is important to my party. You know, don't give me all that bullshit about I believe Dr. Ford. Fuck you. No, you don't. Or even if you do, it doesn't matter to you. It really just shows me that power, especially with white women, right? White women are so happy to prop up this patriarchal white supremacist system because they tangentially benefit from it. And no better representation of that was seen than in Susan Collins on Friday.
there was this really great quote from Rebecca Traister. Women who are willing to defend white patriarchy and its abuses, usually women with proximity to powerful men and the chance to gain from it, and who are therefore themselves often white, have historically found reward from those powerful men in the form of sexual or romantic attention, marital alliances, as well as jobs and stature in exchange for their defense. Basically, white women have always been like this. They have always allied themselves with the white patriarchy in order to save themselves or in order to gain power from themselves, right? So we talk about like Betsy DeVos, Ivanka Trump, Susan Collins, right? Like these women will ally themselves with a fascist administration, with a patriarchal administration, any patriarchal administration, because they are privileged in that administration. They are protected in that administration. But other women are not. Other people of color are not, right? And so that is what, this is why I call it a betrayal, right? Because if it was any other fucking judge, I would still think it was unacceptable. And I would be like, ugh, God damn Susan Collins, God damn Lisa Murkowski, God damn it, like Jeff Flake, right? But this justice specifically, the way that he talked, the way that he expressed his partisanship in his first confirmation hearing and in the second hearing, the way that he expressed his like anger towards women and towards even being questioned by female senators or Democratic senators in general, the way that he lied about trivial things and really big things like his own fucking judicial record, was unacceptable, right? You could have found hundreds of conservative justices as qualified, as willing to do a better job lying.
He is the embodiment of white male privilege. And so it stings to see so blatantly how far a woman like Susan Collins will go to protect that white male.
Because again, we could have had Justice Barrett. We could have had Justice Kethledge, Justice Hardiman, Justice Thopper. They're all as bad as Justice Kavanaugh, maybe even worse in some respects, right? But this guy, you had to shove this guy down our throats. That's a betrayal.
It's so open. The whole process, they were so obvious about the fact that they didn't fucking care. And that, I think, is the scariest part.
No. Lindsey Graham said the quiet part out loud in that Fox interview the day after the hearing. He's like, I'm more sure now than ever that Kavanaugh didn't do this, right? That's all bullshit. The thing that he said, quiet part out loud, is like in saying that, what he's saying is that like, I don't care what evidence was just given to me, because sworn testimony, people, again, I'm not a lawyer, but I know this, sworn testimony is evidence. Because if you swear something under threat of perjury, you are basically saying, send me to jail if you find out that I am lying, right? Like, so, and there's other evidence too, the polygraph, the fact, because it's not a court of law, it was a hearing, right? There's other evidence, the polygraph, the therapist notes, the fact that she told her husband about it, the fact that other women like Mark Judge and other witnesses would be willing to like confirm that Kavanaugh acts like this, right? That's what he was saying. That's what Lindsey Graham has been saying these past 2 weeks, is I don't give a fuck if Kavanaugh is an attempted rapist or just somebody who likes to shove penises in women's faces. I don't care how bad he is, I'm still going to vote for him. And that was like the quiet part out loud. And it was so enraging, because you're right. It's like basically he's the embodiment of like white male privilege. And the GOP is literally saying, yeah, this is what we value. Nothing else matters. That's what we care about.
You know what's not smart? Job sites that overwhelm you with tons of the wrong resumes. But you know what is smart? ZipRecruiter.com/hellbent. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't wait for candidates to find you. ZipRecruiter finds candidates for you. Its powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes, identifies people with the right skills, education, experience, and lack of sexual misconduct accusations, and actively invites them to apply. So you get qualified candidates fast. No Kavanaughs in your future. No more sorting through the wrong resumes. No more Susan Collins bullshitting around what she's going to do. No more waiting for the right candidates to apply. It's no wonder that ZipRecruiter is rated number one by employers in the U.S. And this comes from hiring sites on Trustpilot with over 1,000 reviews. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/hellbent. That's ZipRecruiter.com/HELLBENT. ZipRecruiter.com/hellbent. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Okay, Devin, what's going on with family separation, child detention centers, and the Department of Homeland Security?
I can't believe I'm still talking about this because it just gets more and more horrible. There was a report released last Tuesday, and it found that the Department of Homeland Security was completely disorganized, and that's me being very gentle, about tracking kids and families who were separated at the Mexican border. So basically, they were unprepared for the zero tolerance policy. And so they didn't have any way to actually create a database or, you know, meaningfully track anyone who was caught up in that system. So, I mean, just from a technical point of view, it was like some agencies had access to like this shared spreadsheet, which I'm sorry, is it 2001? Like, okay. And some like parts of agencies didn't, and they were literally attaching Word documents to emails. And the whole thing was manual and just laborious and completely just, it was not a system. I think Marcia, you said this maybe last week where you were like, it's basically just a very large, sensitive, important project. And every single business has some sort of project management system in place. Fuck, we have a project management in state.
We do.
With it's all pretty two good, of us.
If I do say so myself.
It's pretty good. Yeah, exactly. And so, but we're talking about children's lives.
Yeah.
So not only did they not know where they were, but migrant children are only allowed to be held for 72 hours by law in facilities that are designed for short-term detention. So basically 72 hours. This report found that 564 children in the Rio Grande Valley of Texas were kept in those facilities longer than 3 days. In El Paso, it was about 297 children. And the government's response was basically like, oh, well.
They literally said this administration will no longer turn a blind eye to illegal immigration and will continue to refer illegal border crossers for prosecution. What the fuck?
Exactly. Like, that was her response to a question about, like, why did you keep these children in facilities longer than you were supposed to?
Yeah.
And the answer is actually in the report. It's because they didn't fucking know where these children were.
Yeah.
It is absolutely. I mean, we're talking about babies. I mean, we're talking about
some of
kids,
them younger than five.
Age.
Yeah, they are younger than five.
You know, and their response is basically like, oh, well, we weren't really prepared for this. And it's like really subject to human error. So, you know, it's like not that big of a deal. Like, whatever. Like, that is literally the tone of their response to this. And these are people's lives. These are people's children's. These are people's, like, psychological and physical well-being that. And their best excuse they can come up with is that not all of the agencies has access to the same shared spreadsheet. Like, are you kidding? How much money do we give Department of Homeland Security? And how much could a simple project management software possibly cost? I have an answer because we use one and it's not that much.
Yeah. Also, like, I'm just saying, I haven't crunched the numbers. I haven't done the back of the napkin calculations. But if you had actually just put ankle bracelets on all of these people, stop building these giant fucking tent cities for kids and not spent all this money like housing them for the past couple months, right? You could have saved money and you still could have gone on with your dystopian dream of deporting every single child and mother. Like, sorry, right. you could have still gone on with your dystopian dream of deporting every single like parent and child. Like you still could have done it by just not housing them in these fucked up tents and not separating them from their parents. You could have still deported them all. If you wanted to.
Everything about this story is fucked up. And we just get these trickles of information that keeps the pain fresh. Because as soon as we think it's gotten as bad as it could possibly get, we then learn that not only is it so fucked up, just on like an ethical, moral, like person level, but the fact that they didn't even bother to administratively take responsibility for this and to even attempt to pretend to care about these kids. Because honestly, like, how hard is it to build a spreadsheet? And if they really cared even a little teeny tiny bit about any of this, they could have figured out a better system in a week. You know, so maybe, you know, it would have been a small number of people that they fucking lost. But they didn't even bother trying to fix the situation. They were just like, nope, this is how it is now. We're just going to do Microsoft document attachments to emails. Like, go fuck yourself. What is wrong with you? These aren't babies. These are children. These are people. And you are giving me some bullshit line about human error and a shared Excel spreadsheet. Please, for the love of God, I would like it so much more if you just said, well, we don't really care and we're not really trying that hard. Because at least then I could look you in the face and believe you.
Every time I see one of these stories every week, and I put it in our project management system for Devin to read, because she's probably already read them, but I put it in our system so we can talk about it. It's so like tough to have to talk about it, because I don't know what else I can say besides the fact that this administration is fucking evil. They are just plain evil, right? They literally are evil. And what really like bothers me is people who are just like, oh, like, you know, reasonable people can disagree on immigration and stuff like that. And I'm like, no, this is no longer a reasonable people can disagree issue. This is no longer policy differences. This is just fundamental humanity differences, right? And so that's what really just fucking bothers me about it.
And again, this administration is just cruel. And I think that that's also very well kind of documented in some of these smaller under the radar policies that they're trying to pump out, like this story out of the State Department that says diplomats can only have their same-sex partners live in the United States with them if they are legally mm-hmm. married, and which first of all is ridiculous, and second of all, only 12% of UN member countries have legalized same-sex marriage, so we are leaving out huge swaths of people that for which marriage is not an option, and saying, well, bully for you, we don't give a fuck. And like, this is not an issue. Like this is one of those things where it's like, nobody was complaining about this. Like, there's no reason to revoke diplomatic visas of same-sex partners. It's not like this was some like huge underground scandal. They're just doing it because they're dicks. That's it. That's the whole fucking point. And it just, The depth and breadth of their cruelty is astonishing. It's not surprising. It's astonishing. And that's what this is. That's what this whole bullshit about the like this administrative problem with not being able to figure out where children are, about taking away visas from people who are here, you know, in a diplomatic capacity with other fucking countries. Like, are you fucking kidding me? And then you want to throw Kavanaugh on our faces and tell us that we're the, and I'm using this word specifically, crazy ones? Like, are you out of your mind? I've fucking lost it. You know, I was telling Varsha before we got started on Friday mornings, I go to therapy. And after I went to my therapist and we were talking about all sorts of bullshit in my life, about Kavanaugh, about my fucking hair, which is going gray at an astonishing clip. And I we had a session, and then I came home and I was just fucking around on the internet, and I read this BuzzFeed article, and it was a roundup of funny texts about people who work in retail making jokes about working in retail. And those kind of articles in BuzzFeed are like, you know, they're funny. They're like meh funny. I was laughing so hard that I was crying. And that's when I realized that I had just fucking lost it, that I was just so overly, I was just fucking done, because I like didn't have a grasp on how to deal with all of this. And I just don't know how to recover the soul of our nation.
I really don't. Like, you see, like, the Supreme Court thing is going to follow us for 30 fucking years. I have to see that guy's face for 30 fucking years. It's like a slap in the face for the next 30 years until I'm basically almost 60. It's going to be a slap in the face, right? Yeah. And then this, you know, these two stories are a stain on our country. Right? They're not going to be forgotten, right? It's going to be one of these big, like, I'm not going to analogize this with like how historians have written about the past. And I'm not going to like make predictions about how historians are going to write about this event in the future. But I know how historians analyze stuff and how they understand like contingency and like decisions and stuff like that. Child separation and this administration's immigration policy is going to be a big chunk of any historian's book on this presidency, or on anything really, trying to understand the 21st century and America and racism. Right. And this story about same-sex couples is just It's just cruel for no fucking reason. There's no budgetary reason against this. There's no policy reason. There's no diplomatic reason. There's no logic behind it. Just to be cruel. It's fucked up. It's going to be a stain on the country. Like, that is the one thing I can say for sure. The shit that we were talking about today, all of this stuff, the Kavanaugh stuff, the child detention centers, and this policy from the State Department is just it's just fucked up. It's fucked up. Swing Left is a national grassroots organization. This election season, Swing Left's message is, don't just vote this year, volunteer. It's so important that people volunteer and not just vote, because as Devin and I say on the podcast, it's important to do a little bit more than the bare minimum. And the bare minimum is registering to vote and making sure you vote on November 6th, right? But most people have the time to do a little bit more and to volunteer for candidates that they believe in. It's really important to elect progressives, not just support legislation in healthcare, gun legislation, you know, domestic violence legislation, education, other amazing programs, but also to be a really amazing check on Donald Trump. And that is why we have to elect a progressive house this fall. When you join Swing Left at swingleft.org/hellbent, you'll be immediately connected with other volunteers in your area who are working to win the race in a nearby swing district. You'll find out where and how you can make the most impact on flipping the house starting right now.
Okay, Varsha, obviously this week and for every week for the foreseeable future, there are going to be just like an embarrassment of candidates to choose from for Dickwad of the Week. But this week we chose someone specific, and it might be an odd choice, but Varsha, I'm going to let you explain it. So who is the Dickwad of the Week?
Our Dickwad this week is none other than former Associate Justice Anthony Kennedy. Good old Tony. By good old Tony, I mean the nightmare of my life. So as we all remember, this particular national nightmare began earlier this summer when Kennedy was like, fuck it, I'm going to give my seat to Trump because I think democracy is dying, but I'm also a partisan hack and an asshole. And so the reason we're giving him the Dickwad this week is because he was at the swearing-in ceremony of Brett Kavanaugh. And today, actually, he gave an interview, or he gave a quote, or somebody asked him, and he was like, I'm sad for our democracy. I'm worried that it's dying. And I'm like, fuck you. If there is anyone to blame for a democracy dying, it's the millions of people who had a chance to vote and weren't restricted from voting in 2016. And it's Donald Trump, and it's you. It's you, Anthony Kennedy. Like, I can blame Justice Roberts. I could blame Alito. You know, they fucked up. They gutted the Voting Rights Act. Clarence Thomas helped, you know. But it's also you, because you retired at the worst possible time. You know, there's like really bad times to retire. Like, there's bad times to get fired, right? Like, Rex Tillerson got fired on a toilet. Like, that was a shitty time to get fired. But there's also really shitty times to retire. And you chose the worst possible time, right? So, like, you know, I was talking about like how this is going to be like other stuff that's happening. Is it going to be a stain in our history? I am 100% sure that people like Anthony Kennedy, Jeff Flake, and Susan Collins will be viewed as the cowards. They'll be viewed as the fucking complicit actors in this period. They are the complicit actors. They are 100% complicit. There is no redemption arc, right? And I just want to say, like, the reason he is like the asshole that he is and the Dickwad this week is because for years that he was on the court. And I know not everyone listening is like an avid SCOTUS watcher, but like for years that he was on the court, we like waited with bated breath every term to be like, oh, this is the year, man. This is the year he sides with us, right? And because he like made that ruling in Obergefell and we're all grateful for the gay marriage, he was like, we were like, oh man, this is the year he's not gonna like rule with Trump on the fucking Muslim ban. But no. And so because of small things that he did, which are influential, and I will give him credit for, like Obergefell, right? Because of stuff like that, we like waited for these crumbs and we assumed that he was a quote swing justice. But I just want people to remember that he wasn't a fucking swing justice. He was pretty fucking conservative, and two, retired at the worst fucking time, and three, was like, oh yeah, one of my best students, who's now been accused of being a sexual predator, is going to be sworn in. Let's get out of my, like, house, and let's, like, fucking go up to the Supreme Court and help swear him in. I don't have to be there, but let's just do it for shits and giggles, just to really slap the country in the face, just to really tell women, yeah, I don't give a fuck about you, just to really tell all the gay people who got married since I had that ruling that, oh yeah, if Kavanaugh tells you you can't buy a cake in the future, yeah, that was me. That was me. I just really want you to know, right? I just really want to be that dick. I really want to be that dick. And so that's why he's a dickwad, is because he retired at the worst possible time, and he says stuff at the worst possible time. He's just like, oh, democracy is dying. Fuck you.
Obviously, every single person in this entire little theater of the absurd parody we're going through right now could be the dickwad. But Anthony Kennedy... last week, maybe the week before, I drew this line between Roberts, Kennedy, and now Kavanaugh. A line of three Supreme Court justices who clerked for each other and held each other up and promoted each other and got us into this goddamn motherfucking mess in the first place. And to centralize power like that, Kavanaugh is the 114th person ever to serve on the Supreme Court. And the vast majority of those have been white men. I mean, vast majority. When we can draw a line between three of them, you know we have a fucking problem. And that is part of why Anthony Kennedy is our dickwad this week. Because it is so much more insidious than Colin's betrayal or Flake's, you know, little stunt that he pulled or Murkowski voting present. It's so much more than that. It's so much deeper than that. It's the fact that Kennedy and Kavanaugh and Roberts are all connected. There's this thread between them. And that Kennedy thought it completely acceptable to just, like, use that thread and that power to basically rub it in our faces that he can.
I mean, like, it's just because, like you were saying, right? He's like 114 justice. 108 have been white men. Four have been women. Four. Three of them are serving right now. Sandra Day O'Connor, like, retired, right? Three have been non-white. Three. And only one has been a woman of color. And that is, like, less than the...
He's serving
that
right
is
now.
Less than the two men who are going to be serving who are accused sexual predators. There is only one female woman of color in the history of the Supreme Court, but we have two different men, one African-American and one white, who have been accused of sexual assault, and they are serving in the highest court of the land, right? So, fuck everybody. Fuck the patriarchy.
Yeah, Kennedy's the stand-in for this disgusting patriarchal system, because it's so fucking obvious when you look at him and his career and his connection that this is deeper than just what happened on Saturday.
Yeah. Okay, Devin, what are you grateful for this week? I know it's been tough.
So I have a couple, but one that I discovered today that has been making me really happy is that Party Rock Anthem, which is a terrible song. But the music video is actually pretty cool. And it's got this, like, cool, like, dance sequence. But what people on Twitter have found is that that dance really syncs up with a lot of different songs, including Billy Joel's Uptown Girl, Whitney Houston singing I Will Always Love You, and just Lily Allen's Fuck You. And so the dance just syncs up perfectly. So it's definitely become this meme. And it was just sort of the thing that I needed. And another thing that came out of Twitter is this guy, Brett_Kavanaugh, who tweeted, it's a really bad day to be named Brett Kavanaugh. And then at Not That Mike Pence said, I feel you, brother. And I legit laughed out loud.
That's amazing.
So so those are my silly internet memes. Varsha, what are you grateful for?
I am grateful for something that I can finally be proud of. Someone that I can finally be proud of, because I've had to, like, defend her a lot over the years, right? Because, you know, it's hard to defend her. She's problematic. None other than T-Swift, Taylor Swift. I love her. Okay, I've loved her since fucking Teardrops on My Guitar, since I was in middle school. I have always defended her through good and bad, through Kanye struggles and stupid fights and all that shit. especially last year when she sued her sexual harasser for $1 to make a fucking point. And I'm exceptionally proud of Taylor Swift today, because today Taylor Swift, as people may know, is from Tennessee. And today on Instagram, she endorsed Phil Bresden for Senate, and she endorsed another candidate. She endorsed Jim Cooper for the House, right? And that's because basically she believes that, like, Marsha Blackburn, who voted against the Violence Against Women Act, I guess that would matter to Taylor Swift, who's experienced sexual harassment. And she basically, like, stood out on politics, right? And so there's been this meme going on for, like, the past couple years on Twitter, which is, like, Taylor Swift's silence on X stance is deafening, right? And finally, Taylor Swift is, like, coming out on the right side of history. And I'm grateful for that, because I love her music regardless, right? When, like, in 2016, 2015, whatever, when she would just stay quiet on it, and she was really as, like, as Nussbaum, her name is Emily Nussbaum on The New Yorker. As Emily Nussbaum says, like, Taylor Swift is like a constructed person. She's a Slytherin because she's constructed herself, right? And today she finally just, like, let go of that construction and, like, just talked about what she believed in. And I found that really powerful. And I found it really amazing.
A good friend of mine actually worked on her tour. And he actually is the one who texted me the link to that Instagram post where she said that. And he was like, yeah, I mean, you were right. Like, I'm glad she's using her platform. And yeah, it is a really lovely story. Swifty.
Yeah. I love her music. I was literally just talking about her music on a date today. And I was, like, unabashedly showing my my Spotify playlist and my music collection. And he was like, Taylor Swift, really? And I'm like, yes, really. And I went on a, you know, 3-minute tangent about how Taylor Swift is defensible. And this was before I saw that she had endorsed a Democrat for Senate and Congress. And I was like, holy shit.
All right, Varsha. So a couple of quick action items. So something that our Hellions can do after they listen to the show.
Okay, first thing, if you haven't already done it, you really should. And if you refuse to do it, don't talk to me ever. Register to vote, okay? It's really easy. They have websites now. They have apps. You can just call a phone number. There's so many ways you can register to vote. It's so easy. Everyone should be listening to this right now and being like, am I registered? And then you go on your state's, like, website and figure out if you're registered. Just check if you're registered. Please.
It's even easier than that. If you go to hellbentmedia.com/action, we have all of the tools. You can check if you're registered, you can register, and you can find your polling place. So honestly, like, it's so easy. Please do it. And then obviously vote on November 6th. We're going to be telling you that literally every show until November 6th. And then the other thing that I want you to do is donate to RAIN, the Rape, Abuse, Incest National Network. They support survivors of sexual violence, and they have many programs that support them. So it is definitely, we have fucked up good in this country right now. And the very smallest thing we could do is help fund programs that are giving back to survivors of sexual assault and harassment, because this is a terrible, terrible time to be dealing with that trauma because of what this country has done collectively to sexual violence victims. So please donate what you can. It is a really fabulous organization. So Varsha, that is it for us. Thank you all so much for listening. We will be back here on Thursday. And don't forget to listen to Crush the Midterms and Candidate as well. We will be dropping new episodes this week. And yeah, Hellions, have a fantastic week. Raise some hell and get ready to burn the motherfucking patriarchy to the ground. Hellbent Podcast is a production of Hellbent Media. It is produced by me, Devin Handy.
And Varsha Venkata Subramanian.
We get editing help from Andrew Walsh. And we, of course, take input from co-creator Sarah Lerner.
You can follow us on social media at Hellbent Pod on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook.
And you can join our Facebook group, Dickwads Be Gone, at facebook.com/groups/dickwadsbegone.
You can follow me on Twitter at @Varsha_Venkat.
And you can follow me at Devin Handy. Also, remember to subscribe and rate us on iTunes and rate us 5 stars, because that's just the rules of feminism. Tune in every Monday and Thursday for an intersectional feminist look and the centering of women's voices and people of color. We look at current events, public policy, and upcoming elections to give you the most incisive look into stories that don't get covered elsewhere.